are now about to witness the strength of geek knowledge.
I geek out about TV shows. I geek out about music. Star Wars, of course. Fantasy stuff, Lord of the Rings. Star Wars, of course. God geek.
It is the God Geeks Podcast. Welcome, my friends. My name is Bill Brimer, and this is my main man,
James Cleland.
I'm at Bill Brimer on Twitter, and he is
at the James Cleland.
And so our podcast is a mixture of theology and geekology. We like to get into God stuff, and we like to get into geek stuff.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
week, we're going to get into the issue of doubt. What role does it play in faith life? And in that's a section we call Jedi Mind Tricks, is sort of our cute little geeky name for when we talk about God stuff. But that usually spills over into This Week in Geek, which is our segment where we talk about geek stuff. And this week, James is going to give us some movie reviews on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
We're going to talk about some
trailers
that came out. We're going to talk about, of course, the show, the best show on television.
Best show ever.
Ever?
I love it. I don't know, maybe ever.
Well, it's up there. The Leftovers is fascinating, wonderful, crazy, theological, science fiction, weird, wacky HBO show that we can't get enough of. And I don't know about you, but for that hour of The Leftovers each week, I'm so in that story, but I forget about the world outside.
I watch it on my iPad with like my covers over my head, and I'm in it.
Headphones.
Yeah, and, headphones, everything.
Okay,
and there's no world around when I'm watching that show.
That's the kind of show
it
is. It's home theater.
Yeah.
It's perfect home theater television that you can really, if you've been on this journey for all three seasons, and we're in the middle of the third season, it's that good, and we're going to talk about that in This Week in Geek.
Yeah.
And so let's get into it. This is Jedi Mind Tricks.
I don't believe it.
That is why you fail. You must unlearn what you have learned.
It's Jedi Mind Tricks, the portion of the show where we talk about theological things, theological subjects, and this is not necessarily even simply a theological subject, James, but what we decided to talk about was doubt.
Yeah.
And there's some profound questions to ask about this whole issue of doubt and what role might it play? Is it a sin? Is it evil? Can you have faith and also have doubt? Can your doubts serve a purpose? Can they be redeemed? We have a Bible verse from James that hits pretty hard.
Scary.
Hits pretty hard on the idea of if you have doubts.
Uh-huh.
And we'll get to reading that here in just a second. But what do you think? What do you think about doubt? What role do you think it plays? I have some things to say, but I don't want to.
Yeah. Man, unfortunately, I doubt all the time. I'm being honest.
Okay.
Especially in those dark moments where woe is me, something's happened to me. I start to doubt. Or when.
Okay, so let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
So is that a doubt, that God is real, that God is good, or that there is God, or is that a doubt in?
I think I have different levels of it. Sometimes, if my life is not doing so great, then I start to doubt God's promises.
Okay,
which would be, I mean, the opposite of faith, really. And then there have been times where, you know, looking at the whole big picture of things, I might start to doubt. Maybe not God's existence, but all right, am I in the right base camp?
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, like I have a hard time understanding doubt of God's existence personally. That's one that when I look at the universe,
okay,
when I look at everything,
so
that's
okay,
that's
okay,
a hard
so,
one for me.
So you're you're pretty convinced, let's just say for a second,
yeah,
the step outside the whole the whole role of a church worker, a called man, and, and so you say beyond the specifics of the faith of Christianity,
right,
you're pretty convinced that there is an intelligent
creator,
designer,
yeah, I'm pretty convinced of that. That's one that the deeper I go, I might have questions, I might doubt certain things, but I'm like, you know, a fool says in his heart there is no God.
Yeah,
you know?
So for you,
for me, that's one that I don't.
For you, the question then becomes not is there a God, it's who are you, and how real is this revelation of the Bible specifically?
Yes.
Yes. For you, have I gotten it wrong?
No,
about that, who you are, but not God, you don't exist necessarily. Right. The doubt doesn't run so deep, but that you don't necessarily, that you sometimes wrestle with, uh-huh, if he is who you think he is.
Right.
Well, you know, that's actually,
I believe, help my unbelief.
Yeah, I would say I think that's definitely a form of doubt, but I think there's an aspect of that that is not the doubt that James is talking about in his epistle,
okay,
which I'll read, because I before I read it, I don't want to lose my thought. I think that is more of doubt of your own knowledge of who he is.
Okay,
but I don't know. You tell me. I mean, if you're in a place if you're saying I know there's a God, I just don't know if I'm right about who he is. Well, that's
right.
That's kind of a common occurrence in the sanctification of a Christian, is it not? Because you're constantly learning you need Christ more, and it's
totally
parts of you that are dying,
yeah,
and parts of you that are saying you don't have it figured out, and you need this. This guy's not who you had created him to be.
Correct.
You are who he's created.
Yeah, I could. Yeah,
you to be. You know.
I think you're right.
So I think that's a form of doubt, but I wouldn't.
But there have been times where really dark moments, I'm like, I'm not even sure about the Christ thing.
Yeah.
Like that is the doubt that scared me, I think, when I got there a little bit. Like, man, this is a, you know,
this is the loss of faith.
This is the yeah. And the grace of God.
It's terrifying for a guy who has really wrestled with big things and here's it's interesting because I'm with you. I had what I would call I'm going to call it a storm of doubt, because I feel like doubt, if we're going to be honest, there may be a lot of Christians out there who don't have doubts. Okay, I don't know. I think there are a lot of Christians who do have doubts, and I think doubts about the faith come with a territory of wrestling with God.
Yeah.
And I say storms of doubt because I feel like they can blow into your life and really do some damage.
Yeah.
And then blow out of your life.
Yeah.
And
as quick as
and
I
then
can
actually
sometimes.
There are yeah and yeah and very this could happen rapidly. But I do think, and this is in my opinion. I don't have any text to back this up. So take this with a grain of salt. I do think God redeems those storms of doubt, and I actually think he can show you some things about yourself and about the church through those storms of doubt. I don't believe he causes them.
No. He causes faith.
Right. But I do believe he does redeem them.
Yeah.
And I think we have that promise in God. I would be open to someone arguing against that. I recently had a pretty serious storm of doubt in mm-hmm. which I felt like you had said, really afraid that so much of what the scriptures that I had, so much of what I have come to understand what they say, okay?
Right.
I'm not saying I have the perfect grasp for what the scriptures say. I think anybody who asserts the claim that they do is suspect from the very beginning. but I had serious doubts about my understanding, not in my own understanding, but I just had severe doubts about the whole thing, the whole faith.
Yeah, and it's a lot of if-then things. If this is suspect, then this, then this, then this.
And I think
the
most terrifying part about that was almost like I was ripped out of the mind of Christ or out of the mind of his church, out of sort of my identity as part of his church. And I kind of got a glimpse of the church for a couple of days or so from the outside, and it was terrifying.
It's pretty scary.
It's terrifying because we are so far from good ambassadors and good representatives of who he is.
Yeah.
You know, when you read the Jesus in the Bible and then you look at so much of how he's represented, you say that that's so far from who he is that it terrified me for the church.
Yeah.
And as the storm of doubt passed and the Lord gave me relief and I dug into the scriptures more, I felt like I was solidified more in the idea that we have a very, 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 very broken church.
Yeah.
I don't mean our congregation or any specific congregation or any specific denomination. I mean the church on earth does so much damage to the gospel.
Yeah.
By its profession, by its action, by its
inaction,
by its behavior against other Christians, by its arguing from within, by its disunity, you know, all of these things.
It's disheartening.
Yeah. So this is part of the storm blowing in and out of my life.
And I can say I think I went through the exact same storm when a ministry I worked at completely destroyed itself from the inside.
Yeah.
And everyone there, professing Christian, and man, were we being evil.
Yeah.
I mean...
If you're ever sort of removed from that for a moment and you get a glimpse of it from the outside, you kind of see these sort of vicious carnivores just tearing each other apart, and you go, that's what I'm a part of. It's not only terrifying to look at from the outside. What's more terrifying is to have that storm of doubt, if you will, pass and then realize what I saw was probably a glimpse of something really true. And I am 100% not only a part of that, but responsible for it.
Responsible
for it. Yeah. So this is part of like a maybe a larger conversation as to sort of how harmful the church can be and is in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There are millions of people who have a testimony of the bad things the church has done to them. And there are also a lot of people who have testimonies of the good
things. Well, here's the irony of it too, though. The storm that I was in the middle of, what helped bring me out of it was attending the church that we work at now, Soul Thirst, for the first time.
Yeah.
A church body was actually, in hearing the word in sacrament.
Yeah, that's the church too.
So as much as falling apart.
So perhaps
kind of
as much damage as you were a victim of,
perpetrator.
Perpetrator of all those scars that you brought out of that.
Yeah,
it was also the church that healed you.
Yeah, it was hearing the word.
Yeah,
being around believers, being in part of the church too.
And
that
to be
me.
Fair, it's not. It wasn't the church. It was Christ himself.
Exactly.
You know, it was his spirit. You know,
exactly.
And so I think there's sort of the argument for keeping a clear proclamation of good news in Christ at the center of the congregation life or the church life, because that is how God does his healing through incredible good news, incredible fulfillment of promises in our midst by absolution, by healing, actual physical healing, by you know, casting out of darkness, by, you know, raising the dead, by feeding his body in blood, by doing all the things that Jesus does, and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom to come and the kingdom that is here, all those things that we talk about. But that being at the center of the church life is probably, would you say that was the main factor in the healing that you experienced?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just digging into the word in general, hearing the word, I mean, it just calmed the storm.
Yeah.
You know?
So I promised to read from James, and I'm going to do that.
Not me.
Not Vicar James, but the writer of the epistle. Let's see. It starts in James 1, and here's the bad thing about doing this is we're going to take this out of context, and that's rule number one. And
which happens a lot with that. James, but
it actually does. But I think this is a pretty clear text. I mean, it's talking about the harm of doubt. It says, but he must ask in faith without doubting, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That's 1:6. And then 7 continues, that man should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. That's pretty tough right there.
Yeah.
He's a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. The brother in humble circumstances. Okay. So that's talking about that's 1 through 8 or 1:6 through 8, 3 verses there. Which I'm sure we'll misapply here
in our
discussion. but what does that say to you about yourself? If you're this guy that you doubt, James, I mean, not James, the epistle writer, but James is sitting in front of me right now.
Right before that verse is talking about, if any of you lack wisdom, ask.
Yeah.
But if you ask with doubt, nothing's going to, you're not going to get that wisdom.
Yeah.
So
there's a promise in there.
There is a promise.
So there's a promise to be people who ask God for his wisdom and believe that he will give it.
Yeah, and his wisdom's not going to give doubt. So there's that other side of it too,
mm-hmm.
I would assume.
No, I think that's right. I think I mean, like we've already said, God's not the one that gives you doubt. And James is saying you're double-minded.
Yeah.
You're unstable in all your ways, and you shouldn't expect to receive anything from God if you are one who doubts. And here's the thing about it. Here's what's terrifying about those verses, is that it's true, obviously, but it's true about me.
Yeah.
And that's what's terrifying, is that it makes me really look at myself and say to myself, you need to be honest with yourself, Bill. You are a double-minded man, and you are unstable in your ways, and you shouldn't expect to receive anything from the Lord. And here's the good news that's not necessarily, we shouldn't apply too quickly. We should really wrestle with that reality, but I am unstable. I am double-minded.
Yeah.
I am sinful. I am a doubter, and I should not expect to receive anything from the Lord.
And yet.
But I hope and believe that not only will I receive something from the Lord, but I'll receive eternal life.
Yeah.
And I realize that statement there is the opposite of doubt, and so. But there are times.
I believe.
Yeah,
me and my unbelief.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really a very. Here's the thing. I don't necessarily know that I want our listeners or I want you to really come to a conclusion about this.
Yeah.
I don't want to make anybody doubt. I simply want to say. I feel like our faith. And you guys can disagree with me. I'm totally cool with that. You probably disagree with me most of the time anyway, especially when it comes to the geek stuff. I feel like our life, as we're still sinful men and women on this planet, is a wrestling match with Christ, and we really are constantly trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And he's constantly trying to kill us.
Yeah.
And we're trying to kill him to put him in the ground, and he's trying to kill us so he can raise us to life.
Yeah.
And
someone's going
to
die.
The good news is, the bad news is I keep trying to kill Jesus. The good news is he just doesn't die.
Yeah.
Cause he's already done that.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not that I don't want you to come to a conclusion about Christ and how powerful he is and how he's just not going to die. I do want you to come to that conclusion. But I don't necessarily want, I don't know the answers to this, and I don't know, I know that God redeems things, and I know that if you're someone who's listened to this and that you have serious doubts, you're not alone. Mm-mm. And that, like you said, James, and like James' epistle says, ask the Lord. Prayer works. Ask the Lord for wisdom. Ask the Lord for faith. Go to him, no matter how dark it gets, and say, Lord, you're going to have to do this for me. If you know, don't be afraid to say, if you're real, if you're real, Jesus, I need you. Yeah. Because this is a real genuine prayer. And if you do say that, it's not you who's saying it. It's the Spirit in you. You know, it's the Spirit in you crying out with groans in mourning, because I don't want to encourage doubt, but I do want to encourage those who doubt.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know.
Yeah.
Because I doubt myself, and that's sort of a. It's sort of a true statement in more ways than one. I doubt myself.
Yeah.
And I also doubt is what I meant. But I definitely doubt myself. I am an unstable man. I am a double-minded man. I am a man who should expect nothing from the Lord, but Christ is not double-minded, and he is my substitute. I put all of my chips in one basket, not because I'm capable or good of it, but I have to rely on the goodness of Christ. I have to rely on the mercy of Christ. I have to rely on the grace of Christ. I have to rely on the righteousness of Christ. And I have to believe that he gives that to me, despite me. Right.
Yeah.
And I should not count on anything from the Lord.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
All right. This Week in Geek.
We got some leftovers.
C-3PO has got to be the real nerd.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
Darth Vader was a cool character too, although he was the evil one.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Time for This Week in Geek. I've had a really geeky couple of weeks. I don't know about you, Bill.
I didn't think there was any chance that you didn't.
I know, right? I made it to the movies. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Speaking of movies, before you go into Guardians of the Galaxy 2, there was a trailer that came out.
There was. Blade Runner, did you see that one?
Okay, I'm talking about a different one.
Let's see. The one with the dark tower.
Dark.
Yeah,
the dark tower, the gunslinger.
Oh, man, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I got so excited I just hit my microphone, so that's probably going to affect the broadcast.
It looks good. I saw some leaked footage a few months ago, and I wasn't sure. Now
I am very hopeful about it after this trailer, because the trailer looked awesome.
It does look
good. And we got into some geekiness on
We got to talk about the horn.
Well, yeah, there's a whole there. We could do a whole episode. We'll save it, because the movie's coming out.
Yeah, not too long,
and we won't have to wait.
We might have to go to the movies and do an episode.
We're definitely going to have to. Okay. But what I found so funny, because you said you had a really geeky couple of weeks, and I was like, of course you did, because our text exchange about the Dark Tower, the Dark Tower movie coming out, was that James was like, he texted like, he's like, I'm going to read the books again this summer before it comes out. And I was like, that is really geeky. Yeah, it's really, really, because there's 7 books and they're long.
They are long. I'm going to do it.
And I know you are. And that's what's so geeky about it, is you're going to do research. You're going to read it. I know what you're going to do. You're going to be reading it for all the parts about Cuthbert's horn.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, we'll
move on. You're giving away too much.
I digress. Yeah.
And Blade Runner trailer looked good. Did you see that?
I've seen a Blade Runner trailer. I don't know if I've seen...
There's a full trailer now, and it is awesome.
Okay.
It came out a couple days ago. It's amazing.
Okay. Maybe I haven't seen it.
And here's how geeky I am. With some of my students, we've been rewatching Blade Runner to get ready.
Okay.
So, you know.
Okay.
And then, okay, I rewatched Guardians of the Galaxy 1 because Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was
coming
out.
And you had to do your research.
I had to do my research. 2 is awesome. It's fun again. It's a good movie. I highly recommend it.
And you said there's not as much profanity in the new one?
Not as much, no.
It seemed like there was kind of a lot in the first one.
I think I remember some of that, yeah. Not as much as Deadpool or anything like that. But
yeah,
a little edgy, but... I would say if your kid's a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, you're going to be okay.
Well, they've heard it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. We probably. Don't have like the whole parental approval thing anyway.
No, we don't do
We're not, you know what I mean? We're like, hey, don't listen to anything we say.
It's
going to
get me in trouble someday.
Don't say, we're not telling you to watch anything, all right? We're talking about what we watch.
And now I want to tell you what to watch. Handmaid's Tale on Hulu.
I've heard you talk about
this. Oh, man, I am so excited about this show. It is... subversive in the best ways possible, I think, right now. It's based on a novel from, I think, 1985. Margaret Atwood's the author, and they've kind of updated it for the world we live in now. And it's a dystopian near future where theocratic rulers have taken over the U.S. because of terrorism and other things, and everyone's placed in different classes. And there's a virus going around that means not many people can bear children. So if you can... then you're kind of created. You're a concubine kind of now.
Oh man,
for the elite.
Right.
And man, it is dark and colorful at the same time. It's amazing. It's really worth watching.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also started American Gods, another novel turned into a show. It's on Stars.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's good. It really is reflective on American society. Like what are our gods? You know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a cool, otherworldly.
It's based on Greek gods, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Loosely?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Let's just say that...
The sort of poetic license with the Greek gods?
Well, sure, but all gods. All gods. So okay. The premise is that gods are real and that they derive their power from being worshipped. So if a society worships them, they're very powerful.
There's an iPhone god, and he's super powerful.
There's a screen god, and you worship it by staring at your iPhone all the time, and that's a very powerful god.
Okay. So it's...
it's interesting.
Black Mirror-ish in that.
Yeah, Black Mirror-ish in that sense. It's good. Actually, I do a project with my kids when we look at Greek mythology. I'm like, okay, now you're going to create a god. You know, what's an American god?
Technology would be a very powerful.
A lot of kids do that. Some did like a makeup god and other things and built altars to them. I'm like, this is great. And y'all realize they're all false gods, right? They're like, yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
It was a fun little project, but I got the idea from the book.
Yeah.
And the show's, it's dark. It's grotesque, but it's good.
Now you read the book before.
Yeah.
And does the show meet your expectations of the book?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. It's expanding a lot on it, but yeah, it's good.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Anywho. And then of course, Leftovers.
The geekiest thing. The best thing on television.
It is the best thing on television.
There's no question about it.
No question.
There's no question about it. There's not even anything close right now on TV.
I am so glad that, I guess it was a year ago, you said, you got to go back and watch it. You got to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
Man, totally.
It's paying off, isn't it?
It's paying off. I might have to go back and rewatch it.
So we are now on the fourth episode of the last season.
Yep. And we're in Australia.
The Leftovers. If you have not watched it, you should stop the
recording. Stop listening.
Recording right now.
Okay, see you later.
The... fourth episode, which I'm not sure we've covered the third episode here on God Geeks.
The one with Kevin's dad?
Which was excellent.
Great.
Scott Glenn as an actor.
A great standalone episode in a lot of ways.
Phenomenal standalone episode. Yeah. We got a lot of Kevin Sr. in episode 3, and we got a lot of Nora in episode 4.
And Nora was in episode 4?
This was very interesting because I feel like there's perhaps some legitimacy to the group that can send you through.
Yes.
Okay, do you feel the same way?
I feel like the fact that they said no to her, it was not them stringing her
along.
They
didn't take her money.
Didn't take her money. They were saying no because
she's amoral.
She's not the right person
for
what they're doing.
I do feel like they... It's fascinating that the whole baby thing before the bus with the interview, I felt like that was them.
I feel like it
testing
was
her
too, possibly.
And then, but then the question and her answer to it was, I remember, and I'm not claiming moral superiority
you
over
mean
Nora,
I get to
the character.
Cancer?
I, I remember the question, like watching the show, and they asked the episode, and like, would you kill, you know, so the question is, you have two babies.
Twins.
If you, one of the babies will grow up and cure cancer, but only if you kill the other baby, which is a ridiculous, scenario. But so would you, you wouldn't have to kill the baby, but would you allow the first baby to die knowing that the next one would cure cancer? Yeah. And of course her answer is,
yeah,
she rationalized it with babies die all the time.
Yep.
You mean I can cure cancer and all I got to do is one more baby. Of course I kill the baby. What's next?
Yeah.
When the question was asked, I was like, absolutely not. I would not, murder. You're murdering a baby.
Yeah. Ends do not justify the means.
That right. So I feel like most of the viewers were saying,
I
wouldn't do that. Yeah. And Nora didn't say that, and she had this rationalization to go along with it, which helps you try to empathize with her character. But I was already to the point this season with Nora that I felt like my loyalty to her was being really stretched. Mainly because of the way that she was interacting with Kevin, but because there's so much questions about, is she losing it? What'd she do with that baby? She gave that baby to the original mom, which I think was a good thing, there's just a lot. It's just a very dynamic, complex character, and it's beautiful.
It is a show full of doubt.
Yeah.
I'm doubting every character. They're doubting everything in their life. There's just...
What was the other big incident of doubt that we got introduced in this fourth one? Could you know what I'm talking about?
I'm blanking.
It's Kevin having an actual
delusional
episode.
Yeah, with seeing Evie.
How crazy is he?
Yeah. But then that delusional episode, if it hadn't have happened, he wouldn't have been connected with Kevin, the other Kevin.
Yes.
So
it brings it back full circle.
So both and.
So you go, there is a guiding purpose here. Yeah. Which will
make him feel even crazier.
Yeah. It's
in my craziness, I'm being used.
So complex, and the show is not afraid to do genius brushstrokes like that and make you go, now I'm doubting the whole narrative that Kevin actually died and went to the hotel or everything. Did he dream all of that?
Yeah.
You know, was he psychotic with Patty was he just unconscious or was he dead and they put him in the ground, you know, and when he come out of the ground, was he just coming out of the ground because he'd come back to consciousness or was he actually dead? But obviously I think the story is trying to say that he was dead.
Right.
He did go to the hotel. Those things did happen.
Right.
And because
the older Kevin saying he did connect through the Aboriginal ceremony and the...
Well, that's the thing.
The hotel, but he's crazy.
Actually, that's the thing.
He doesn't remember it, though.
No.
He doesn't
remember. He doesn't even know that he talked to him through the TV. So did he?
Yeah.
He was just gone for two.
Yeah.
Was that Kevin's delusion? Inside a delusion? Or was that actually Kevin Sr.? Fascinating stuff.
Good stuff.
It's a great show.
It is.
Well, that's it for this week on God Geeks, man. We wrestled with doubt, and we'll continue to... We'll continue to... eat leftovers here. We'll see you next week.
I hate leftovers.
Fellas, of course. God Geeks.